to wrap up today, really, by trying to put packaging in a little bit of context for you. And I hope you've enjoyed today. I hope you've seen different elements of how packaging connects with the food industry, what it means to the food industry, what's coming down the pipe, and how we're trying to respond as an industry to all the trends and drivers that we've talked about. But what I just wanted to touch on really was the very complicated world of sustainability, and I know there's various people in the room that I'm sure could help me with some of this discussion as well, but just to really help frame some of the views that I know Jane touched on as well in terms of what is packaging sustainability all about today and what does it mean for us as consumers, because we're all consumers as well, of course. Really, I'm coming from the place of this demonisation of packaging, which I know we've talked a lot about today, but as you can see, we're acutely aware as an industry that this is going on, and the Daily Mail has an awful lot to answer for, which is why we've talked about it today. But interestingly, this guy here, John Dalley, is the EU Health Commissioner. So he's not even from the food side of the EU, he's actually the Health Commissioner, and he stated in 2011, "I want to raise awareness of the unacceptable amounts of food packaging waste." Not food waste, food packaging waste. "And it's important to achieve further reduction of food packaging without compromising food safety." And we would agree with that second statement. Not having overpackaged goods is a good thing. Not using excessive materials is a good thing. But unfortunately, it sends a message out there that somehow food packaging is a bad thing. And I'm hoping today that we've convinced you otherwise, and we've seen some great technology and some great work by the industry, which should change your mind on that. But let's have a look at actually what the UK situation is today. The UK is using about 10 million tonnes of packaging annually, and our GDP has risen by about 28% in the last 10 years, despite the recession, but our amount of packaging consumption has only risen by 8%. So what that tells us is, even though we're buying more, we're taking more products into our homes, packaging hasn't risen at the same rate. So we are lightweighting and offsetting material usage on a continuous basis. Packaging still only represents less than 3% of all solid waste that we produce. So in the scale of waste as the human race that we produce, it's still only a very small percentage, but seems to get a very high level of attention from the media and from various lobby groups. And generically, 60% of it is recovered and recycled each year. Okay? I think this figure is really important. 1.5 billion has been spent by UK business in the last 10 years.
Ouch, getting attacked, what's that?
It's a moth, sorry, I thought it was a moth. 1.5 billion is being spent by business in the last 10 years to double the amount of packaging recovered and reused. So we're not standing still, we're not ignoring the challenge that we see with packaging waste, we're doing something about it. And even my company, okay, we sold Regain Polymers several years ago, but our primary concern in our business is to use as much recycled as we can and to work on the recyclability of our products going forward. So we're not standing still as an industry. This might take you back to a slide that Jane used earlier. It's a slightly different slide produced by RAP. But what this does is focus on personal metric tons of energy that we all consume per week. And what this shows you in terms of eating your food and the food supply chain energy that's used to create the food that you eat, it's about 337 megajoules of energy per person per week that's used up. In contrast, using your car based on driving an average of 50 kilometres a day, you're using up 1,010 megajoules per person per week. Again, food packaging is only down at 35. So I'm just trying to put it in the context of where it really sits in the way that we live our lives. And there seems to be a perception, Jane talked to us, she talked to employees of a packaging company, and 95% of them said they thought packaging was an environmental problem. Well, the reality is, for every household annually, we take in about 3 metric tons of products per year. We buy and consume 3 tons of things, stuff, in our house, and that takes 110 gigajoules of energy to produce it. And I appreciate these are very rounded numbers. And packaging is protecting that commercial investment. The actual packaging that enters the house is about 200 kilograms. And the energy used to make that packaging is only about 7 gigajoules. So again, proportionally, it's very, very small in the story. We've talked about food waste. Food waste in some countries is as high as 50%. And the further you get into the developing economies, the worse that number gets. Thanks to packaging, only 3% goes to waste in Western Europe. So there's real extremes of experience depending on how sophisticated the retailing, supply chain, packaging systems are. And unfortunately, we're the culprits. We're the ones actually creating a lot of waste in our homes. Now this is some data produced by PIRA back in 2010, and they tried to look at where is food waste created. And unfortunately, retailers seem to get a really bad rap in the media over this. But actually, of all the waste created, only 5% comes from the back of store of retailers today. 38% comes from the food manufacturers, and the big problem sits with our households. And you only have to think about your own litter bins at home. I have one of your lovely recycled green bins, and I've moved from Essex to Chester, and in Essex they have an industrial composter, and I have a little green bin, put my food waste in, a biodegradable bag, and then that goes off to the industrial composter. Forget it in Chester. They have no idea. I physically take my food waste once a week to a skip site that handles food waste. I think it's going off to a farmer or something somewhere, and my stuff goes in a skip. They don't handle it. But if you start collecting your food waste, you very suddenly realise how much is going out. I'm emptying that bag every 2 days. I've got two small children who don't want the egg or the yoghurt or don't eat the fish and chips or whatever it is. You're very quickly aware of your food waste problem in your home. And that's where our main problem is today. And that's about packaging design a lot of the time. Not putting too much food in the portions, being able to reseal our packs, having portion control in the design of our packs. We have a role to help reduce that number. So, the real answer, packaging is not the demon that we started with. In fact, this is a statement from Alan, who couldn't be here today, and I'm very proud of him for saying this. If packaging was actually invented today, it would actually be considered a green technology, because we need to defend it rigorously as having a, you know, really strong role in the food industry and protecting that investment that we're making when we produce food products. And fortunately, in the draft ISO norm for packaging, it is recognised that packaging is playing a critical role in every industry, every sector and every supply chain. It doesn't matter which industry you're looking at. But we do have to fix consumer perceptions, because there is this continuing challenge of the consumer not really understanding what packaging is all about. To change consumer perceptions and to do a better job as an industry, we have a host of options available to us in terms of designing, let's call it ethical, sustainable, green packaging. From creating degradable packs, to renewable packs, lightweighting them, low carbon, recyclable, using recycled materials, or looking at the water, air, litter situation around the packs that we create. There's an awful lot we can be doing as an industry. But which of them's right? Which of them is the right solution for the future? Which one is going to have the most impact, the most value, the most use to society? And I think the jury's still out on that. We have some very strong views as Limpack Packaging. I'm sure Sainsbury's has a view. I'm sure many of you that are coming through as students have a view about the one right way we should look at packaging design. But I have to say the jury is still out. We feel very strongly this is not the right way. Now, it's a great debate point and I'm happy to debate it. But degradable packaging has some severe challenges. Number one, consumers can't degrade the packs that are being developed. Consumers, when they see biodegradable, they think, fantastic, I'll dig a hole in my garden and it'll go away. Degradability is under pressure, temperature and humidity conditions that are controlled in most cases. There are some examples of pure degradable packaging. But in the main, degradable packaging can't be done in the garden. It has to be done in an industrial composting facility. Those don't exist, and therefore industrial composters aren't available, and your local authorities mustn't include those degradable packs in their recycle streams, because guess what? It's a contaminant for our partners at Regain Polymers. But we don't want it. Consumers can't do it, and the local authorities won't do it. It's also largely ignored by retailers today. There was a bit of a hoo-ha over the use of PLA some years ago, because of the chances of these materials getting into second life plastics, the type of products that Richard's producing, and then causing deterioration of product characteristics further down the chain. So that's no good. And from my side of the table, we have a very large food service business. We're supplying your fish and chip takeaways and your kebab shops and your burger shops. And I've got a horrible feeling my guy that's drunk on vodka and Red Bull at 2 a.m. fish and chips reads biodegradable on his packaging for his fish and chips, he's going to go stick it on the floor, nothing doesn't already, because, oh, don't worry about it, it's going to biodegrade. Well, that's not a solution, because then we create litter, we create another problem, and it's not biodegradable in the street. So number one, I think the jury's out on biodegradable. Okay? Renewable materials. Superficially, this is a great argument. Let's make our packs from plants. We like this one. This one kind of ticks some boxes for us. However, there's been very limited success to date. Products that we've seen have had no wet strength, they struggle with barrier, they're not tough enough, and there's limited thermal stability. So we're having to mix them with prime ingredients. We're mixing them with prime ingredients, and guess what? We're causing the problem for recycling again. However, we are seeing some developments of organically based, plant-based new polymers. So what we're calling sort of the Braskem route, Braskem being a large chemical company that's now making plant-based PE. We've had these guys in, we've talked to them, we really like what they're doing, but it still raises massive concern over, are we using land for polymer production rather than food for the world that is already short of resources in food? And if you look at the cost of these products today, you're looking at 4 to 5 times the cost of standard polymers. Well, we started the day by saying the industry is not paying for green products. There's no way the industry is paying 4 or 5 times the price for PE that we're paying today. So we're struggling with this one. But I do see these types of products starting to improve. We are seeing some developments in polypropylene, and we are seeing some developments in PET as well. Carbon. Carbon is coming out probably as one of the strongest arguments for measuring the ethical sustainability of our products. Carbon and weight are intrinsically linked. Very simply, we get obsessed with carbon footprinting. But the heavier your polymer, the heavier your product, the more carbon it will have used. It's as simple as that. Okay? So when you look at polymers and the amount of carbon used in a pack, the heavier that pack, the more carbon you can assume has gone into producing that pack. It's a very simple equation. But carbon footprinting is available for most manufacturers now. We know we have a problem with global warming. We know the industry is driving for weight out, reducing the amount of carbon that it's producing. And we also know carbon is hugely difficult to realistically measure. This whole cradle-to-grave idea of carbon footprinting is incredibly complex. But it's indicative, it's intuitive that, hey, hold on a minute, I've got a very heavy product, it's come from a long distance, this probably is going to be a very high carbon-producing problem, therefore I need to lightweight and move to a more efficient system. Recyclability. We sold our recycling plant, which was absolutely right. It was because we needed to focus on our core competency of food packaging production. And we as Limpak inherently believe in the role of recycling in a mature retailing economy. There is a growing European infrastructure for recycling, and today it's dominated by plastic bottles, milk bottles and water bottles, pretty much feeding the vast majority of what we're doing. There is recycling of food waste, but it's ending up in sort of second life applications, not back in the food industry. And we have a challenge with films in particular. And we're seeing a lot of shift of rigid packaging to flexible packaging, which means quite often from a monopolymer to a multi-layer laminate, 7, 9, 10, 12 layers is quite common nowadays. And the energy to strip back those products is just not commercially viable today. We are starting to see other rigids getting collected. It was a shame we were hearing about PP in the south, but PET trays, PP pots, tubs and trays, and PS yogurt pots and trays are now starting to be collected in the UK, which is good news. And the reason why I was asking Richard about the 2017 packaging directive is we cannot, as a country, meet the requirements of that directive unless all of those are fully recycled. There is very little of that going on today. Okay, very little polystyrene, very little PET tray recycling, some PP pots and tubs in certain areas, but not in the south, seemingly. Now, recycling lives on or feeds off clean polymer streams. And the more we want to recycle, the more complex the stream becomes. So really what we've done in meeting the packaging directive so far is we've taken what we call the low-hanging fruit. We've said, milk bottles, water bottles, we recognise them, we know what they're made of, they're single polymer, great, let's create a closed loop on those. But now we're going to throw in PET trays, my business. My business has PE lamination films, it has EVOH barriers, it has different lidding films fixed to it, it has labelling systems. We're now starting to create complexity and potential contamination. And that's the challenge we have with recycling. Now again, I'm not saying recycling is not the right thing to do. It is absolutely the right thing to do. But we have a fundamental problem in the UK. Consumers don't understand plastics, and we can't expect them to. They recognise hard plastics, soft plastics, and foam polystyrene, and that's about it. I defy you, when you go home, to work out what's polyethylene and what's polypropylene in your fridge without looking at the labels. Pretty difficult. So we're going to have a tough time breaking up that recycling process. Ultimately, and this is my political statement, driving towards the Packaging Waste Directive, and I'm hoping you're nodding at me here because I think I'm saying the right things, we've got a really high risk of creating downhill quality, reduction in quality in our recycling streams if we push towards those Packaging Directive goals. We're not set up from an infrastructure perspective in the UK today to hit those targets, and I'm sorry, the industry has to face up to that. And we're starting to have that debate. I know you're going to Parliament next Tuesday. I was invited to talk directly to government ministers to say, guys, you're not investing in infrastructure to help us do this. We're more than happy to do it and support you, but we're not there yet. I would also argue that recyclability for its own sake, and that being the only green mechanism that we use in the UK, is not the right argument. There is tremendous innovation going on, impact design. Jane showed the difference between the tub and the pouch. There was no conclusion there, was there, in terms of which was the greener product. And that's the challenge we're facing. Just having a purely recycled product doesn't necessarily mean it's sustainable. There's an awful lot more to consider. And I think we need to accept innovation as a key factor in the way that we design packaging going forward. It's not all about recycling. Recycling to the maximum of our ability, yes, but not that it dominates everything, because we could make some mistakes as we go along. However, we are driving the use of recycled content, and that's going to come from somewhere. Okay. Now, in my company, we use a lot of PET, which is a closed-loop food packaging, food waste recycled product. And we take PET from water bottles. In fact, Alan, who's not here today, calculated that if we laid all the water bottles that we use annually in a recycled format, we could get halfway to the moon and back in terms of remaking manufactured trays for the protein and bakery industry. We're using thousands upon thousands of water bottles to make another product that has value. And PET, as one polymer, has a very simple supply chain, closed loop into food, and is doing a great job. Can't be said of PP and PE today. They're being recycled, which is great, but they're not coming back into food packaging applications because we can't control the quality of the polymer coming in. You can imagine PP, I don't know, petrol containers or nail varnish containers or a garden equipment material packs coming into the same stream as food packs, and you can't tell whether something's heavily contaminated with heavy oil or petrol and so forth. So those products have to be kept away from the food chain. The main problem with using recycled content is EFSA, the European Food Standards Agency, has to approve the materials and the processes we use that guarantee food safety today. So at Limpack, as an example, we have massive investment in a system called Vacurama, super cleaning. So we take recycled polymer from companies like Richards and we super clean our own materials. Even though they've done all the cleaning, sorting, batching, you name it, we then take that in and we super clean it ourselves. We guarantee our own material ourselves by spending millions on high pressure, high vacuum, high temperature cleaning. in every site, because we're in food. You cannot supply the food industry unless you're prepared to warranty your hygiene. So we do that. The problem is EFSA hasn't approved many of those processes. They've only just done two or three in the last year, and we've been at it for 4 years now. So we physically challenge our system. We contaminate flake with pretty heavy chemicals. We push it through the super cleaning systems on a regular basis, on a quality controlled basis, and we prove to ourselves through a challenge test that that flake is completely clean. We then document that data and we submit to EFSA on a regular basis so that we're allowed to continue that process until the point where they say, yes, that's a viable process for this industry. And it will come. In the next year, we're expecting to have approval. The challenge is always with recycled materials, food safety. As I've said, you have to have guaranteed food safe sources of flake, and those don't exist today in any other polymer other than PET, and that's why PET is growing and growing and growing. Great, we're using it, and you know, we're really proud. I think I mentioned at the start of the day where we're starting to supply the meat industry in the UK. We're now supplying product with 95% recycled material in the tray, which is a fantastic job from the engineers and the scientists behind it, as well as the recycling industry. But typical rates are around 50% in the UK. That's not typical. So, to summarise, what are we learning? We've learned, I think, over the day that environmental concerns around packaging continue to shape consumer choices and dominate the story. We have to continuously make the case for packaging. It has been demonised in the media, particularly in the UK. Now, I'm sure we'll continue to have fun with the Daily Mail. We do have to challenge the assumptions of consumers and ill-informed people around the green attributes of packaging. I don't think there is a right answer. We're very pro use of recycled materials, we're very pro recycling, but I'm hoping that plant-based polymers and new polymers will come to market to open up the opportunities for us as a society. And we do agree that recycling and the use of recycling has its place in reducing carbon. However, we believe there's a limit to it, and you know, I'd gladly be challenged by industry on that. Limpack, we sponsored today. I hope you don't feel that you've been sold at, because that's not the issue today. We see ourselves as a company that's here to kind of lead and show the way forward to people both within the food and the packaging industry on where we can go to improve our products and meet society's needs. And you know, our view is that super cleaning our recycled materials and doing the right things with our products is the way forward for our industry. But we'll gladly take input and you know, informed views from yourselves to help us develop what we do. My final message is, after all of that, the consumer is still king. They're the ones who drive what we do, drive our products, and their perceptions are reality. Sometimes we think we know better, but actually the consumer will make the decision for you on what pack they buy, what choice they make, and we have to remember that all the way through. So thank you very much. I hope you found today informative. Thank you to the IFST for allowing us to host today. I don't know whether there's any further questions from the audience.
I have just one joke.
Yeah.
Your vacuuremic process. Mm. That's actually been verified for some of your competitors.
Depends
2 or 3 years ago.
No, it depends on the system grade that you've bought. There's 9 or 10 different types of machinery out there.
There's
only certain
three,
ones that have been approved. Yeah.
But you were looking for approval 3 years ago too.
Yeah. And I was on the
paper
list.
No,
still waiting. I see it every time. It's EFSA approves another system, and we're going through, is it ours? It's not been done yet. Still waiting. But we've been told in the next 6 months...
Is this because
months,
of process?
Yeah, just
control.
Sheer... No, it's sheer backlog at EFSA, people to do the job, people to go through the projects and look at it. I don't believe there's any concerns about the technology, it's just sheer manpower.
The technology's there.
Yeah.
Right.
And we're very comfortable with what we're doing. We're just waiting. Anything else?
Anything else on earlier in the day? I mean, Dave, who was doing morning, did say we would talk about materials in contact with regulations, so if there was any questions then? You might have got to the end of the day and you forgot what you might have covered then, but, or you might have covered it at lunchtime.
We are PDFing all the presentations if you'd like them, so they'll be distributed by the IFS team, if that's okay. So it'll just take a couple of days and we'll get all those out to you. And many of the videos we've shown are available on YouTube as well.
No, I'd just like to say to thank Lynn Pack for putting this on to get the IFST, the Western branch here, to sort of expand the areas that we cover. So I know it might be slightly more packaging industry. Normally we might have something that balanced it the other way, but I think we certainly discussed all issues. And just to sort of, and it's also thanks to Barbara from Lynn Pack, who's doing the organisation with us for it. And also just thanks to all our speakers who did a great job today. One last thing is the Western branch of the IFST regularly run conferences. This is the first time we've moved into a different area, but the last 2 years we've been running an auditing conference in October, and we've got a third one coming up then. You should have got stuff in your packs. Unfortunately, I got delayed and didn't get into all the packs with dates here. So if you haven't got any information, there is some in the IFST, but I've got all your emails, so I'll probably pester you, even though you're moving more packaging orientated, so you might not be interested in an auditing conference, but it's a great conference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's no problem. So thanks, Liam. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.